Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. This Thursday, one Juno journey ends and another begins. An oral history project called Juno Voices comes to fruition. It's been incorporated into a self-guided tour of downtown Juno that launches this Thursday. The signs and the maps are there. And soon, all you will have to do is hold up your cell phone to scan the QR code, and you can hear the story.
We're going to start walking. Come with us.
At each marker, you'll hear some of the lesser-known stories of Juno that go back generations when Tlingit families lived and subsisted on the city's tidelands.
Nineteen fifty-five.
My grandmother picks up a handful of earth. She is giving her daughter Dorothy land as a wedding present. My grandmother lets the soil fall through her fingers as she says,
"Always hold on to this land. Never let it go."
That's the voice of Lillian Petershore, who worked with Ryan Canaro, two artists who teamed up to bring these stories of early Juno to life. I spoke with Ryan and Lillian recently about this project to get a preview of what they hope will bring a deeper understanding of the city's first people. So how did all of this get started? How did this project come to fruition?
Well, thank you for having us, Rhonda. We're so pleased to be here. I've been a longtime Juno-based artist and went from Juno to New York to work with Ping Chong and Company. And after a handful of years of preparing, we were able to create a Ping Chong and Company theatrical production back in Juno at the Juno Arts and Culture Center called Anyat Kusani, Noble People of the Land, which featured five Tlingit and Haida community members telling their stories. Lillian was one of the key people who helped us reach out to people in that process, and then, in fact, was herself in that production, which Frank Katas and I co-led. And when we premiered that production, folks at CBJ said, "Hey, you have been engaged in this process of interviews with people around the community. We're in the process of launching this downtown signage system. Maybe we could work together." And that led to Juno Voices.
So for those of us who didn't see that initial production, tell us a little bit about it. What was it like to be a part of it?
It was really dynamic and gratifying. And it's actually a production that you can watch. It's about 90 minutes long. And if you Google Anyat Kusani, our Noble People of the Land, it will take you to a YouTube. And there's even a post-production show that you can watch. For me, the gratifying part about being in the show was having an opportunity to share history about being Yanyedi, about growing up in the Juno Indian Village, just recognizing that there is a rich history of Indigenous people in the area and celebrating that.
I'll also add that an important fundamental vision that we all shared in the creation of Anyat Kusani, Noble People of the Land, was telling the histories of the downtown Indian Village, where, of course, the Juno Arts and Culture Center sits, where KTOO sits, where the State Museum sits, that was once tidal flat, was once the shoreline, and is now filled with mine tailings, and was people's homes and livelihoods were there. And the five storytellers were able to illuminate that history that many people in Juno, including me, never knew until this project really got underway. And that kind of value of illuminating stories that maybe have been less often told, or maybe even have been intentionally erased or swept under the rug, that kind of value is a part of this project, Juno Voices, as well.
It sounds like Juno changed very quickly.
I mean, I think it certainly did. One very important dimension of the story is power dynamics, colonial power systems, people in power, sometimes strong-arming Alaska Native families and Filipino families. We talk about those histories as well in Anyat Kusani and in Juno Voices. that there were power structures at play and racism at play that weren't just things happening naturally, but actually people sort of being pushed out of that area. And so understanding that story and continuing to remember it, I think, is how we can do better going into the future.
My mother would say it was almost as if we were erased. And so it's really fine to have projects like this to lift up that history. And I love the story of the Juneau Indian Village because it's a story of resilience. In 1963, the adults of the Juneau Indian Village, they worked to get deeds to their property. Can you imagine you are the original people of the area and you're surrounded by neighborhoods where people own deeds to their property and have homeowners insurance? But in the Juneau Indian Village, this was not true. They didn't have deeds.
So there's this production and there's this brainstorm. Let's share these voices on a bigger platform. So what happened next?
We conceived this vision for Juneau Voices. And one of the first steps was that I said to Lillian, hey, would you please be a part of this? And really felt like we can't do it if Lillian doesn't say yes. And fortunately for all of us, Lillian said a resounding yes. And we began to plan a vision with CBJ for a series of sound installations that are linked with the signs that CBJ has installed around downtown that add up to what we call an audio walk. A person can walk from sign to sign. There are 11 stations around downtown, and at each station hear a story from a community member about their lived history and experience connecting to the larger histories of Juneau that's really place-based and site-specific. It happened at that exact spot, or from that spot you can see the place where it happened. And then we have two narrators, David Katzik and Aaron Tripp's voices, who guide us from sign to sign. All told, the whole journey is about an hour to an hour and a half as you walk through downtown listening to these storytellers.
So Lillian, tell us about the two people that will serve as the narrators for this project.
Yes, Ryan and I were working on how are we going to have the listener be guided through downtown. And it was an idea that we were wrestling with. And Ryan thought, let's have the listener look up at the mountain and see the trees and imagine that it's wintertime and there's snow on the trees. And that speck of snow becomes an eagle. One of the things I so appreciate about Ryan and I working together is we're very synergistic in our ideas. And as soon as he said, and the speck of snow becoming an eagle, right in my mind, I leapt to, oh, we need to have a raven. And suddenly the idea of the two narrators was born, that we would have an eagle narrator and a raven narrator. And for Southeast Alaska, that's perfect because eagle and raven are the preeminent crests. They're the two moieties among the Tlingit people. And then eagle and ravens are so admired by other Alaskans as well. So we had a universal idea that we thought would work. And then we had to think about, okay, who should we invite to be the eagle narrator and who the raven? And we went through a process of talking about this and extended invitations. And delightfully, Aaron Tripp agreed to be our raven narrator. And Kingestay, David Katzig, agreed to be our eagle narrator. And we had a big problem solved. It just felt so right in the moment to use that path of having an eagle and raven guides.
And for people who miss David Katzig, since he just recently passed, this has got to be wonderful to have him as one of your narrators.
Yes, David was a remarkable resource in the community. He was a gifted orator, and when he spoke, people listened. And I also feel that people received glimpses of what our ancestors are like. because David really lived HaShukah, and that's the feeling that we're connected to our ancestors and to the children who are yet to be born. And David would share beautiful Tlingit spirituality, and people would really appreciate that. And I think he did it for two reasons. One was to honor our ancestors, and another was to ensure that our culture would survive into the future so that the children of tomorrow would have the appreciation for Tlingit spirituality and Tlingit culture.
One of the things that I always noticed when David would begin a speech or a presentation, like if it were for children, he would say, "Noble children of the land," or "Noble people of the land." Where does that come from?
It comes from Tlingit oratory. One of the phrases that first troubled me when I heard it, but now I understand the importance of it, is that our elders teach us to imitate our ancestors. And if we explore the works of Nora and Dick Dauenhauer, who did a fabulous job of capturing very famous orators in Tlingit culture and then transcribing their work, you will see references to noble people of the land.
There's something very beautiful about that phrase, noble people of the land. How does it strike you, Ryan?
I agree. I find it to be really moving and really grounding. I mean, it really names, to me, in my understanding, my interpretation, it names so much of what's fundamental about Indigenous culture in this region. When Frank Katas and I were leading the process of the theatrical production, which is, of course, called Noble People of the Land, Anyat Kusani, we had a lot of discussion with the storytellers and with folks at Sea Alaska Heritage, folks at Tlingit and Haida, about what the title of this piece should be. For Juno Voices, it speaks to who these storytellers are, and I like to think of it as also speaking to the listeners as well. When we're in Juno, whether we live there or are visiting, we can, you know, kind of aspire to be people of the land as well, and how we move through the place and engage with it.
Well, we'd like to give KTOO listeners a taste of what this wonderful walking tour is all about. So I'd like to play an excerpt from The Welcome at marker number 1. Can you set us up for this?
Sure, thank you. We're excited to share this glimpse with listeners. This audio installation, the first of 11, is called Welcome to Juno Voices. It sort of establishes the ground rules, if you will, of how this audio walk is going to work. The listener meets our two narrators, David and Aaron, who introduce to them the raven and the eagle that will guide them on the walk.
The welcoming audio installation also follows Indigenous protocol. When visitors would arrive, the house leaders would go to the shore and they would greet the visitors, who would not depart from their canoes until they were given permission to come ashore. And so in this audio installation, we have the spokespersons for the four clans of this area give a greeting to the visitor.
That's a beautiful concept. Well, let's take a listen.
Gunashish an ya kusani. Yadzanta kahini ha ki yati ni. Ho ho, Juno. Welcome to Juno Voices.
Gunashish an ya kusani. Noble children of the earth. Thank you for coming to Zantikahini, Juno.
We invite you to take a walk with us.
A traditional name for Juno is Stakat'at.
The place that has everything.
A place of abundance. Fish, deer, doll sheep, forests, gold, and stories.
Look up with me to the mountain. Yada atkashle.
That means beautiful, adorned face.
Yada at Kashle, right above town with the cliff face.
Often the mountain is shrouded in clouds. In winter, the specks of snow are like powdered sugar sprinkled all over the trees. Maybe one of those specks turns out to be a bald eagle. Chalk.
Chalk is flying out over the city. Chalk is met by Raven. Yes.
Raven and Eagle will guide us on our walk today. Yes, Kachalk.
We are your guides on this walk. My name is Aaron Tripp. My Thlinkit name is Chasnuk.
Kingishte Ayachat. I am Kingishte.
There are 10 more spots on this walk. In each location, we'll meet someone from Juno who will share a story about this place. Altogether, these 10 stories will give you a sense of life in this beautiful place we call home. But first...
First, the spokespersons of the clans who own this land since time immemorial will greet us. The Tlenedi and the Wushkiton of the Aquan and the Yunyedi and the Iskiton of the Takuquan.
Each speaker will introduce themselves following traditional Tlingit protocols. After the 4 speakers greet us, we'll head to sign number 2. That's where the storytelling begins.
Lillian, I imagine a project like this has got a lot of moving parts. What other things were involved besides the recordings themselves?
Yes, thank you. Ryan and I teamed up with several local artists who helped us transport the listener into the heart of the story through sound effects. Mike Sicarius was our sound engineer, and he wove in wonderfully appropriate noises, like when the Cadiente sisters talked about their father arriving on the Matanuska as a chef on that ferry. He included the sound of the ferry horn. And then we had musicians like Hune Lance Twitchell and George Kuhar weaving in beautiful music to support the emotions that are being communicated during the story.
This would be a good time for each of you to tell us a little bit about what are your favorite markers. I know that's hard to do because you've got a lot of stories here, but we'll start with you, Lillian.
Well, the second sign is with Butch Leidy, and Butch Leidy shares stories from his youth and his fishing. Butch, as a young teenager, caught halibut cheeks on the docks, and in doing the interviews and meeting with people within the community, we learned that Butch was not alone. There were many teenagers during that era who caught halibut cheeks on the docks. So you hear that story, you hear about Butch being a longshoreman, about inheriting his dad's 36-foot gill netter, about Juno in its fishing heyday. It's just a lovely reflection back on Juno and the importance of the canneries and the fisheries to the local economy. And more importantly, the importance of maintaining a lifestyle and being able to provide for oneself and one's family through the fishing industry.
I would add to that that one aspect of that story that really struck me when I first got to sit down with Lillian and with Butch is that, you know, simply downtown Juneau was a working commercial fishing dock, and there was a cold storage, there was fish processing happening where we now know are the cruise ship terminals. And that alone to me was a vivid difference between Juneau now and then. To go there with the sound design of Juno Voices is really exciting.
1959. This is Juno Cold Storage. 4 large buildings on pilings. They're blasting the whistle announcing that it's break time.
Fish, king crab, and tanner crab are all coming here on boats. Bigger boats haul 50,000 pounds of halibut.
Butch Leidy is cutting halibut cheeks on the dock.
I'm 13 years old. Cutting cheeks is fun. All my friends are here too. These 2 men over there are each holding a hook with a gutted halibut. With their machetes, they whack the head off and toss it to the side of the butchering table. All of us kids scramble for the head. If I'm lucky, I'm the one who gets it. I cut out the two cheeks, drop them into my bucket, and push the rest of the halibut head into the hole in the table. It falls into the water under the dock.
There's an important observation that Butch makes about limited entry and its impact on Native fishermen, and that is that it's a history of theft.
Let's backtrack a little bit. For those people who don't commercial fish, what is limited entry?
I was about to jump in and say, and if you don't know what limited entry is, go to sign number 2 and you will get a concise definition of limited entry permitting from Butch himself.
Let's listen to Butch tell us all about what limited entry is, because it changed the face of commercial fishing across the state, especially for Alaska Natives.
1971.
My dad dies. I inherit his 36-foot gill netting boat, but the state starts a new system, limited entry permitting. It's a point system. It restricts the number of fishermen who can fish. They're trying to stop some of the outside fishermen from the lower 48, but it doesn't work out like that, and it makes it harder for locals to keep our livelihood.
Fewer boats, fewer canneries, fewer jobs.
The history of fisheries in Alaska, like so much of our history, is a history of theft. My dad has all the points he needs, but his permit doesn't get issued. So I inherit the boat with no permit. I decide to fight. I'm not going to let anyone tell me I can't commercial fish. I come in with a stack of papers this high. I use their weapons against them.
Mr. Clarence Liney, fine. Your limited entry permit is approved.
I guess I'm a fisherman now.
A lot of times, you know, when you look back through these histories of Juneau especially, there's a big emphasis on mining and sort of the sourdoughs that came. And of course, mining did have a big impact on Juneau and the state of Alaska. But it's curious that this project didn't spend much time on that.
I absolutely agree with you. Mining obviously has completely shaped what Juneau is, certainly what the state of Alaska is, what this country is, and continues to do so. Resource extraction is obviously in the headlines daily, and might not be gold, it might be oil, but all of the above. To me, it's not really a but, it's an and, that mining and the history of mining have shaped, and resource extraction continues to shape Alaska and Southeast Alaska and Juneau. And what else is there to know? Because I can speak from my own experience arriving in Juneau at the age of 23 in 2003, and the first history that I was confronted with was the mining history. And at first glance, it looks like that is the entire history. And so part of this project is to say there's a lot more, and there are many narratives that are equally important and many long, long before mining began that we want to lift up.
And something that sometimes does not get shared is that the original clans of the area played a role with that mining history. Kala'i traveled to Sitka multiple times to share gold samples with George Pilts. And George Pilts is the one who grub-staked Harris and Juneau. And then once the mining claims were made, many Auk and Taku people moved into the area where there had been a fish camp, Zunta Kahini, and they moved into the area to take mining jobs. So some of the early miners were actually Auk, Taku people and people from the outlying villages.
But for you, Lillian, what do you think is the most important part of the history of Juneau that this project brings into awareness?
For me, the important part of this project is the affirmation that the Auk and the Taku people are the original people of this area and that they've been a resilient people. When you think about all the obstacles that they've faced, it's just remarkable that We are still on our land. We have not been displaced. And I think that's a pretty wonderful thing to celebrate, the resilience of our ancestors and the fact that we continue to be here today, that we continue to be the voice of this land.
So Lillian, can you tell us about some of the interviews that you really cherish here that give us insight into those early days of Juneau where there was a huge Native presence in the community?
Yes, I particularly loved the interview that we had with Fran Houston and the resulting audio installation. Fran is from the Yuktetan clan. They are all Clanady dog salmon people, and I am a grandchild of the Clanady dog salmon. What I love about this audio installation is that we go back in time to a time when there were just Tlingit people living here. And in my family, I recognize that in four generations, we went from Juneau being 100% occupied by Tlingit people, primarily Auk and Taku, to four generations later being only 12% of the population. What a profound change. So Fran, in this audio installation, tells the story of the homelands of her people that extend, not in totality, but the majority from Sane to Eagles Beach. And then she shares over time the encroachments that have occurred. And so I think it's an important story for validating the Auk presence on this land and for recognizing the Tlingit as the original people of the area, and how wonderful that there are Tlingit descendants who still live and work and have children and populate this area.
Time immemorial.
From time immemorial, our people have been here. We have a summer fish camp and gardens near here along Gold Creek.
Zantikahini, the creek right over there before the bridge.
This place is rich with everything we need.
Teak, dog salmon.
Chas, humpies.
Chuk, cohos.
Ashat, steelhead.
Look towards the mountain from right here. It's all tidelands. There's not a glimmer of any buildings or streets.
So I imagine that the timing of this project was really critical because, you know, before it was completed, of course, we lost David Katsik, Kingeste, and I imagine that we lost some others as well.
Yes, we did. Evelyn Myers is on the last audio installation. And Ryan and I, when we learned of her passing, we both recognized how wonderful it would be to include her in the final product. And it's quite beautiful. It's at the end of the installation. And she is Yanyegi from the Taku Kwan.
My Aunt Dorothy, because she had a great love of the land and the people, and she would say, keep the land, keep the land.
Keep the land.
I just hope that those who have land in the village keep in mind that that's just a very strong, small hold that we have of our history down there. We want to make sure that we honestly depict the history. We are people of the land. And we are the voices of the people.
Raven and Eagle are flying once more. Up above the village, up above the city. It looks like they're teasing each other a little bit.
I love it when they do that. Spiraling and spinning.
They're going up, up, up.
Into rainy, misty clouds. Into the sunshine. Into the stars and the northern lights. From up there, they can see all of this at once. All these stories from this place.
The place.
The place that has everything.
Zantikahini. Juno.
Juno.
Gunashish.
Now the city that has everything has one more thing, the Juno Voices guided tour. And that was our conversation with Ryan Canero and Lillian Petershore. And this project has been their very carefully cultivated garden. Well, this project launches on Thursday. You can go to the City and Borough of Juno's Facebook page. It'll be live at 4 o'clock, 4 o'clock on the 4th of March. It also features a mini documentary produced by KTOO's Andres Camacho. Well, that'll do it today for Juno Afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Support for Juno Afternoon is provided by Hanson Gress, Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, and Klingit and Haida Social Enterprises. For more information, visit ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon.